Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to NITP's For Your Benefit. We're here this Monday, January 5th, 2014. January 6th, sorry about that. Andrew just corrected me. And we have our annual look backward, look forward with Mike Causey. Mike, good morning.
Morning. Happy New Year.
And the same to you. It's been a year, huh?
Absolutely.
No, we see each other each week. Yep. And Tammy, good morning, Tammy. Tammy Flanagan.
Good morning, Bob. Happy New Year.
And the same to you. So we're going to look back at 2013, I guess, look at the good, bad, and not so pretty, and then look forward to our crystal ball for 2014. It can be benefits, it can be bucks, it can be newsworthy items. Mike, you lead off.
Well, when you take the oath of to become a journalist, you must swear and affirm that each year in December and January, you will do a look back and then a look ahead. And since everybody does it, very different versions, it's fun in some cases, useful sometimes. But looking back, and if memory serves me well, looking back last year, and this is why I don't like to make predictions, is so many of the things that I thought probably would happen or more likely would not happen. I was wrong. This is a very strange Congress. It's been strange for years. When you look at it, the federal workers were sort of in fear, seems to me, all year, thanks in part to the media and us telling them what was coming down the road. And correct me if I'm wrong, but in a sense, a divided Congress and a divided government is good for federal workers because nothing bad happened to them other than the furlough, which they and the shutdown, which and they got paid for the shutdown.
Yeah, and a lot of pressure, I guess, to catch back up when they came
right.
in.
But, you know, the perennial fear, you know, the high three is going to go to the high five and the chain cola, which is a very real threat. But none of those things happened in large part because the Congress sort of got preoccupied fighting itself. You know, it reminds you of a puppy that chases and bites its own tail, you know. And in the end, the pay raise really slipped into being. It just kind of happened because Congress was looking the other way.
We saw recently, you said chain cola, and the military pensions were going to be cut back. Tammy, Mike, was that kind of sort of like a chain cola, what they wanted to do with the military?
No, what they did do, and it would take an act of Congress to reverse it now, is that they offered and they made the cola a diet cola for military retirees up until they're 62.
And it's like the FERS program,
like the FERS,
isn't it?
COLA, right? So 1% less than the CPI. So it could, over a 20-year period, reduce a military retiree's pension by as much as 20% over what it would have been having had the full cost of living.
I thought last week there was a bill proposed to, no, we really shouldn't do that.
They want to get rid of it.
They're talking about it.
Yes.
But it was passed.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. One thing, it is exactly like the thing for people under the FERS system at age 62. You know, you don't get any cola up until age 62. Then you get a diet cola from there on. And I think the outrage is for, not for the military as such, but for the people who were forced to retire before age 62. You know, maybe you were wounded, badly wounded in Afghanistan or Iraq or somewhere, and you have to retire, and they take that coal away from you. I think that's unconscionable myself, but the rest of it I think is certainly doable, and I don't think there's a big enough lobby in Congress to overturn that. If it was all veterans, it would be one thing, but this is a very specific targeted group of veterans.
Yeah, now how does that parallel a chain cola?
Not at all.
Cola is just a different way to measure inflation, where, you know, people change their buying habits based on the price of goods and services. You know, so if the price of chicken went up to $8 a pound, you'd buy pork chops instead. And so that would affect the cola measurement by the Department of Labor. So that didn't happen either. That was another fear.
It was number one with all of the unions and NARF and all the other groups, rightly so. It would be the big one, but didn't happen. And the people who argue against the chain cola say, those who like it say it's realistic, and it, because people change. But those they make the progression downward. You go from steak to hamburger to cat food. So
here I am getting on your side, y'all side of the fence. But it didn't pass last year. But does it have legs?
Yeah, I think it does. I think this is. I think this to me, sort of speaking totally neutrally here, this is an ideal political move if the Congress wants to save a lot of money, because federal workers always think that they are the target, that they are the center of the universe in these legislative drives. The people they're after are Social Security. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tammy. One out of six Americans gets a Social Security benefit right now. Mm-hmm. And if you could trim that just by 0.2%, if you could trim the increase, does not trim the benefit, but if you could trim the increase by 0.2% or 0.3%, whatever it is, that would be a tremendous savings in the out years, over 10 years. Jessica Clement of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees estimates that for somebody under the civil service retirement system, if that were in place, over 25 or 30 years of retirement, they could lose up to $30,000. That is raises that they would not get. My math is not good enough.
Well, that's also one thing that could affect current retirees. There's very few changes Congress could make that would affect current retirees.
Exactly.
And that's one that could save a lot of money, both from current employees yet to retire, but also from the 2 million employees who are getting benefits every month. Plus, as you said, all the Social Security recipients.
They're the ones. They're the bigger ones.
But, much bigger
but nobody
group.
Wants to go at them directly. The other thing, too, and I just must confess, I have never cooked a lobster. So to begin with, but my simile is, you know, you put a lobster in cold water, supposedly, turn the heat up, and it slowly is cooked, and it doesn't know it's cooked until it's cooked. And that's what this chain CPI would be. It's very complicated.
Yeah, it's
concept.
Very sneaky.
Yeah. And you do it, and you the first year that it under the new one, you really don't notice any difference. Mm-mm. And you know, even 10 years down the road, that's the raise you get every year. And you need somebody constantly doing the math and showing you how much more you would have gotten. And it's not a lot more.
Yeah, they said historically it's a point, on average, a 0.2% difference.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, you know, in your own paycheck, 0.2% is not going to make that much difference. But multiply that by 5 million paychecks.
Yeah, and you're the math guy, Bob, but compounding in reverse. You know, mm-hmm. we always think about building with compounding, but if you're cutting by compounding, that could work it out.
Right. Okay. Sorry, I went off on that tangent.
No, that is something I think that will come up again. I don't think it's a dead dog yet.
And I think that's the most serious threat to all federal workers coming down the line. You know, all these other cosmetic changes, high three to high five, and some of these other things, they're really minor. They're small potatoes compared to the threat of the chain COLA.
Yeah, and the other thing Congress is facing is some type of change to Social Security. So that would be a way to kind of, through the back door, change it without really changing it.
Yeah.
You know, without really changing the age or the tax rate or the calculation. Although I would imagine, don't you think someday Social Security benefits are going to have to change?
I would think so. Supposedly, when Germany set up its system under Hindenburg in the 1880s or 1890s, the first thing they said was, what's the average life expectancy of somebody? And they gave them an age, and they said, okay, that's when the benefits start.
When they
so
die.
They were hoping you'd be dead before you became eligible. And, you know, when Social Security was set up in, 37, 36, something like that, 1937 or 36, mm-hmm. The average life expectancy wasn't 65. It was much, much less than that. And so it was kind of a minor pocket money program, and now it's become a major entitlement, and I guess it's the primary retirement of most Americans.
Right, and when it was first set up, it didn't cover everybody, it just covered the working class. You know, professionals weren't covered, government employees weren't covered, military wasn't covered, so it was a very small segment of the population compared to today, almost everybody is covered.
You know, one thing they could do, I mean, there are a number of ways to get at this without hurting a lot of people, is increase the amount of money on which you pay Social Security taxes. Because right now it's how much, Bob?
117,000.
Okay. So a lot of people in the U.S. and a lot of people in the Washington area make a lot more than that. So if you'd raise the tax to full salary, whatever they make, that you pay the Social Security.
But here's the reverse of that.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, whenever you collect your benefit, if you earn $300,000 in 2014, you're only getting credit for earning $117,400. So if you raise it to 300,000, yeah. now we have to pay you a benefit based on that higher salary.
Or not.
Or not.
yeah.
You yeah. No, really no,
that's
a, tick
that's
off
a good
the wealthy.
Point. Yeah.
yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'm glad I'm not in Congress.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I wish you were.
So if we look back, what happened last year that's going to have an impact on the current year? In other words, we just talked about last year what maybe didn't make it or what did make it that would surprise people in 2014.
Well, Tammy put this, she should get credit. She put this at the top of her list. I came in yesterday to do tomorrow's column, and it's on this subject, but I had to talk to you to get the numbers right and crunching. But the significant thing is starting January 1, the sick leave credit, mm-hmm. which is
yeah, that
huge.
Was passed in, 2009, the law yeah. actually changed. It's been phased in since then. So people who retired last year and the year before would have gotten 50% credit, but now retirees will get all of their unused sick leave credited. So if you had a whole year saved up, if you were healthy enough that you didn't have to use any sick leave during your entire career and you had a year of it saved up, that would add 1% or 1.1% of your high three onto your FERS benefit. So it's something. It's better than nothing.
On the other hand, compounding. You start out
yeah,
at a higher level.
That's right. And then I guess the other way to look at that, though, is if you had a serious illness or if you needed hip replacement, if you were trying to choose between do I add that year of sick leave onto my retirement or do I go on sick leave and actually use it as salary? And financially speaking, I would say if you have a valid reason to use it, go ahead and use it.
Right.
But don't abuse it.
Yeah. Don't burn it up just to burn it up. I mean, it's
don't get the FERS flu like they used to get. Yeah.
Well, and that's another that to me is a major advantage. I mentioned this to somebody here Friday. I said I was going to explaining this to them, or I thought I was, and they didn't know what I was talking about the ability to accumulate sick leave, because in so many companies, everyone that I've known, you it's use it or lose it, mm-hmm. and they watch it so that you don't abuse it. You know?
Right.
And I know when I was at the Washington Post, we had unlimited sick leave. I mean, unlimited accumulation. And there were some of us who got form letters at one point that said, you have, I think I had over 2,000 hours of
years
sick
worth,
leave.
Yeah.
And I didn't think anything about it. You know, I had to do the column regularly, and it was just part of the job. And the note said, nice job, well done. Nobody deserves that much leave, so we're cutting it in half.
Oh,
you know?
No.
But that's kind of typical in the private sector. So the ability to accumulate sick leave, whatever value it is to you, maybe including nothing, is a really a big deal.
Right. Something's always better than nothing, mm-hmm. right?
Okay, you've and on Tammy is always very organized and has these talking
lists.
Points. And,
I'm a good
and
list maker.
I guess one good thing that happened last year that really didn't have an impact last year, but certainly does starting a few days ago, there's a 1% pay raise for federal employees.
Right, included in the budget and actually made it through. So that was good news. I mean, again, something is better than nothing. You know, 1% is nothing to start buying a new house over, but it is something. It's a little bit more than we got in the last 3 years, so I'm sure federal employees are happy.
At one point last year, it was very likely that the freeze, which had gone on for 3 years, would go on for another two. You know, it was very seriously looking at a five-year freeze, and if you look at that commission that President Obama appointed, the senator from former senator from South Dakota, who am I thinking of?
Oh, the one from the state that has no people living in it?
Yeah, yeah. But anyhow, it was former budget guy and a former U.S. senator, and they came up with this commission, and it was supposed to be like the BRAC, the Base Realignment and Closure Commission. They'd come up with a bunch of proposals. Congress would vote up or down on them, and that way nobody would know who had the bullet in the firing squad. You know, it's turned out it didn't work, but some of the things they proposed in that, including a three-year pay freeze and including the chain COLA and higher retirement contributions, they're still out there. They're the template for everything that's going to come down the road next. And that's why I think people are correct to worry about the chain CPI, because it was in that commission report. The White House has endorsed it, put it in the budget, and the White House has endorsed higher retirement contributions for people. I think it's much less than the House plan, but they have endorsed it. So they're on the same page, and they want to make the same changes. The numbers are a little different.
Okay, that brings up the other issue with COLAs. For a retiree, they weren't hampered in prior years, and in the current year, theirs is 1.5%. Was there any backroom discussion to say, wait a minute, how can a retiree get a COLA but an employee can't?
Well, it's part of this is the media's fault, I think, and part of it is politicians. But the media will incorrectly identify a federal pay raise as a COLA. They'll say government workers are getting a COLA of 1% this year. It's not a COLA. It's never been a COLA. Any resemblance to a COLA is purely coincidental. A pay raise is a fiscal, with an F, fiscal decision and a political decision. The president says this, the Congress says this, and they approve a figure. But it has nothing to do with the pay commission, the comparability, nothing whatsoever to do with it. It's just a figure. The COLA is precisely measured by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, the Consumer Price Index. It's CPIU or CPIW. It's one of those. And they go around all over the country. They have literally a shopping bag of goods, and they'll say bottled water, Denver, 59 cents, Washington, D.C., 82 cents. And they come up with this very complex thing, and includes things like college tuition.
I'd be good at that job. I love statistics.
Yeah. And you could, there's some creative.
And I love shopping.
You could be creative, too.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that's how they come up with it. So as precise as it can be, if assuming you can measure inflation at all, that's a pretty scientific measurement compared to the pay thing.
And the other difference is the COLA for retirees is already in the law. The law provides for an annual COLA. It would take an act of Congress to change that. But employees are not guaranteed by law a pay raise every year. That's what we call it in the seminars is a politically motivated, congressionally approved pay adjustment, because it is a lot of politics involved in it. And by the way, the new pay charts are on OPM's website. So maybe if we can, after the show, we can get Andrew to post these on our site, on the Better For Your Benefit site. So if you want to know what your salary is going to be as of January 12th, the start of the new pay year, the rates are now posted.
He's making the slip me 20 bucks sign. So
with locality.
I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, at least the link to them, because they're here. I just saw them.
All righty. There's another comment in Tammy's list. New retirement coverage for employees hired in 2013.
Yep.
What's the deal that with
that? That was very wise of Congress. They created a new retirement coverage for federal employees called FERS, RAE, Revised Annuity Employees. And what happened for 2013, if you were unfortunate to be hired in 2000, fortunate or unfortunate to be hired in 2013, you are paying more for the FERS retirement benefit than your coworkers who were hired in 2012 and before. So the contribution that 2013 hires are paying is 3.1% as opposed to 0.8%. So they're paying 1.3% more. Now, what Congress did again to even make some more money for the agencies, because what they did was they shifted the employer contribution to the employee. So for now, 2014 hires, if you're going to be hired this year, you're going to now pay 4.4%, another 1.3% higher. So I can imagine these new hires are going to say, I can't afford to put money in the thrift because they're taking 4.4% for FERS, 6.2% for Social Security, and those two together, that's over 11% of my paycheck. And then you want me to put another 10% into the TSP, that's going to make it very difficult. So that's the only change right now, is that they're paying more of their salary for the same FERS benefit. But if you're talking high five and you're talking getting rid of the FERS supplement, to me, that would be the group to target, because how politically devastating would it be for the 10 people we hired last year and the 15 we're going to hire this year,
yeah,
is to say we're going to change their retirement.
So right now, then, you have the three levels of FERS retirement. You have the old people,
yep,
the ones hired in 2013 that are paying a slightly higher rate, and then the ones hired
this year
who will pay slightly higher rate.
Okay, I have a goofy thought. With the exodus of people from the federal sector, there's going to be a need to replace them,
mm-hmm,
so that the new people being hired will make the system more solvent because they're putting more in.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there was any thought in that?
Well, it's not even that more money's going in. It's the same money going into FERS. The difference is the agency's budget is less than the employee. So it's the same overall contribution to cost, the cost analysis of FERS, but the agency can schedule less of their budget towards that because it's now going to come out of the employee's paycheck. So the agencies will have more money for training, more money for equipment, more money for acquisitions than they had before for all the new hires that they make.
And, you know, that's this is not unusual in the private sector because I worked a couple of places and somebody one time was having major financial problems and I didn't know. I was fairly new to the organization and I said I didn't understand why it was as bad as it was. And somebody else said that she shouldn't be having financial problems because she's under the old contract. Uh-huh. And the old contract paid better than the one that we were under. Now, I didn't know there was an old contract, and I was under the lesser one. But, that's not unusual in the private sector.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, with a new hire, if I'm going to go to work for the government and my other choice is to go work in private industry and I get an offer from both, well, at least the government still has a pension.
Yeah.
Private industry doesn't. So even if I have to pay more of my salary to get that pension, it's more of a given. So I still might choose federal service as opposed to private industry if the pay was the same.
Despite all your great articles and the like and our seminars, do you think the average new federal employee understands what they have versus what they
need? Oh, I know they don't.
I don't think so either.
Because I meet them, and they're very surprised when I tell them about their benefits.
And, you know, I have heard this anecdotally from your colleagues at NITP and other places, that they'll go somewhere where the people are absolutely brilliant. You know, maybe you go to NASA or you go out to NIH or whatnot, and these people are tops in their field, they're articulate, they're with it, and they don't have a clue about their benefits package. It's not on their radar scope. It's not that they don't care. It's just they don't think about it.
Have time, I don't think. So despite what you hear about federal employees, they're very busy and their jobs consume them, you know, all of their daily work. There's very few people who sit around and just think about their retirement all day.
Tell a war story, going way back when I was a very, very young reporter, the Washington Post, the White House correspondent was a fellow named Eddie Folliard, and he was the epitome of your 1920s, 30s, 40s. He was beautifully dressed, a Southern gentleman, absolutely unimpeachable integrity, just a wonderful guy. And he'd been at the Post for 30 or 40 years then, and he'd known every president and was highly respected in the field. We're sitting down at the snack bar one day, four of us, a couple of young guys like myself, and Eddie Folliard came in, and we started talking and talking and talking, and somebody said something about sick leave, and he looked like he had heard a foreign word in the Mayan language, and he said, sick leave, and he didn't know what it was. Obviously, he had never used it, you know, but he did, and he'd been there 40 years and had never availed himself of sick leave. He was just too busy to know that there was sick leave and too busy to get sick.
I had a similar story. I was on a bus with a parent I was on a ski trip chaperone, and this parent, it was right after the 2008 stock market going down, you know, 30%. And he was complaining because he had just got his TSP statement, his federal employee. He says, look at this. I'm never going to be able to retire. My retirement just went down 30%, and yeah, I'll have to work another 10 years. I said, well, at least you have a pension. He says, what do you mean?
Yep.
He says, what pension? He says, no, I'm under the new retirement system. We don't have a pension. I said, yes, you do.
Yeah,
he says, no,
one.
I don't. And so we argued all the way to Seven Springs. And then finally Monday he came up to me and he says, you're right, I have a pension. I said, yeah, I know. That's what I do every day. But
he was the happiest man in North America.
He was thrilled. And for 25 years he didn't know he had a retirement.
Well, so, I've talked to your colleague John Elliott from time to time. And I know he'd do seminars and he said every now and then he'd run into somebody who was not aware that they had a pension. Mm-hmm. You know, again,
he thought that was just the old system.
Yeah.
He didn't know that FERS included a retirement as well.
One more war story. I was in, I won't say what state, it wasn't around here, and a friend of mine asked me to come down and do a trade show because we sold soft stuff, if you will. We sold seminars, and this lady came up and she was rather ticked. She said, why would I ever want to go to one of your seminars? And I said, to make the most of your annuity, pension, and the like. And she goes, I don't get an annuity. She was clearly not young. Mm-hmm. And I said, have you been here long? She goes, oh, 25 years. And I said, listen, no, we needn't get mad. I'll make you bet. Now, you go back and ask your boss if you're entitled to a pension. And if you are, you don't have to say anything. Just be glad that you have an opportunity to maximize that. If I'm wrong, I want you and your three best buddies to go out to the finest restaurant. And in this town, it was a safe bet.
Yeah.
And she came back in tears. Mm-hmm. And she hugged me. And she mm-hmm. said, I have a pension. And I said, yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. Just for waking up every day.
Yeah. So
how
I
do you not know that?
I think that maybe not a lot of people, but a goodly number just aren't aware of their benefits package at all.
Right.
Okay, benefits packages. I was thinking about this the other day, cars. The weight that you need to pull with your benefits is your spending habits. You know, we concentrate on benefits, and it's very important, but people ought to concentrate on spending. So if you were to look at this as kind of like a train, the locomotive of the train is the annuity. And whether it's FERS or whether it's CSRS, it's there. The next one may or may not be there, Social Security, depending on if they're CSRS.
It'll be there. CSRS.
It's
a big part of it.
No, I meant CSRS.
Oh, for CSRS.
Now I'll be there for them unless they earn it otherwise. There's always going to be, I agree with you, there's always going to be a Social Security. Question is how much? And both of those are really, you don't have any direct control over. You earn it. And then the gorilla is the TSP, certainly for the FERS people. And if you add those three together in the train, they have to pull the weight of your spending habits. And I think people concentrate so much on the TSP and so much on this and that, on the auto look at whatever you're going to get,
right,
better cover what you spend.
Yeah.
I think the TSP gets more attention because you have to constantly make decisions. You have to rebalance it. You have to decide how much to put in. You have to decide where to allocate it. So throughout your career, beginning with your first week on the job, you have to make decisions about the thrift. But with your FERS benefit, you don't have to do anything other than just work. And at the end of that 20 years or 35 years, you get a check.
You know, the longer you work, the better.
Yeah, the better it gets.
And that's a good point, too. And with the TSP, you can almost do a personality test. Mm-hmm. And some people are, the glass is half full, and some it's half empty. And they look at their, I know when people look at their TSP statement or our 401k here, and they say, gee, I lost so-and-so. And you think, no, you didn't. And by the same token, you didn't make any money either. The only day it counts, as they'll say, is the day you cash out. That's how much you've got. Yeah.
That's right.
The TSP last year, with the exception of the F fund, tore the cover off the ball.
I have two friends, both women, both very high up in government, really, really smart. They know it all. But they're both worriers. And when the market bottomed out in 2007, I think, one of them, she said, I know this is wrong, but I can't sleep at night. I'm putting all my money into the G fund. And, of course, I'm not a financial planner, and I secretly wished she wouldn't do it, but I didn't say anything. I did not do that, by the way. And then, and I didn't have the heart to ask her, but if she only bought G fund, she has, quote, lost a lot of money.
Yeah.
With the recovery, because for a couple of years there, you were buying low. You know, the CS and I funds were way down, so you were buying low. You were dollar cost averaging and making the most of it. And I know with my 401k here, I looked at it for years, and it was like my contributions and nothing else. And it was kind of depressing. And then all of a sudden, one day, it was like somebody added another zero to it, and that was this last year.
Well, I guess by now, because the end of October, the TSP in total was worth $384 billion with a B dollar. So I would imagine by now, with the returns of November and December, that mm-hmm. I'll bet it's over $400 billion or close to it. So that's huge.
The TSP that you mentioned, was that a combination of both the Roth and the traditional?
All of it. That's the entire
balance. So yeah, December was a terrific month for it.
Yeah, the only thing is 39% of it, almost 40% of the TSP is in the G fund.
Yeah,
that's
the people who got bitten with the downturn in the market.
But it's always been a huge percent.
It's usually more than 50%.
Yeah.
I think right now, because the stock market's doing so well, people are moving into it. And isn't that so typical that people, when they see the stock market at its peak, that's when they move into it.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, that's like too late.
You missed the rise. It's
like
the reverse.
You said.
It's, you, you, you sell low and buy high when you do that.
Yeah, they have to
take
learn.
Take a look at the F fund because it didn't do well last year. But why didn't it do well? You know, people say, well, it didn't do well. It's because there was fear that the government would stop the printing presses and that interest rates would go up. The F fund is for fixed investments,
bonds,
which include government bonds. But government bonds can go down in value. Currently, they'll never go down when you go to cash them in if you hold them to maturity. So when interest rates go up, it's a knee-jerk reaction. The reverse, the value goes down.
Mm-hmm.
When interest rates go down, they're not going to go down anytime soon, the value goes up. And that's what happened to the F fund. And it's probably the last 6 months because there was, well, we're going to cut back on the what do they call it? $85 billion
a month. Priming the pump or something.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's encouraging is that the people are investing in the L funds, the life cycle funds. Now, 15% of all of that TSP money is in the L funds, which means people are starting to realize that the best way to do it is to diversify. Don't try to figure out what the stock market's going to do or what the bonds are going to do next year because you can't. You can't predict it.
Well, and you were talking about readjusting too, and I think about. On an icy road, you're on a mountainous pass and everything, and your car starts to skid, and they say, turn in the direction of the skid. Well, that's easier said than done.
It's counterintuitive.
Yeah. And the same with investing. When it gets high, you get out of it. You divert. And that's what the L funds do for you.
Well,
and most of us aren't emotionally capable of doing that, but if it's automatic, it's automatic.
There's a stat that it was just on Federal News yesterday, and I printed it out, and the L funds actually say exactly what you two just said. The current L fund, if you will, had a nice year. It did close to 7%, but as you went to 2020, 2030, 2040, 2050, each iteration did better than the prior one, so the longer
because
you
because they're more heavily invested in stocks.
It. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I know someone, and his investing theory is interesting, and I think he's probably right, but it takes a little guts to do it. Say you're of a certain age, and you should be in the 2020 fund. That's when you're going to start withdrawing and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks it's too conservative.
Yeah, a lot of people do.
Right, so he goes to the 2030 fund, 10 years down the road, and the difference in the return here is 4% a year, 3% a year, but a big difference. But just by walking a little bit on the wild side.
Well, there was a report that came out, the Mercer report last year, that recommended changes to the L fund asset allocation, saying that they are too conservative. Mm-hmm. And so the TSP, I guess, has looked at that in their board meetings. I'm not sure if they'll take any action on it or not, but they are aware of not only the individual investors, but some people who are in the know have reported the same thing.
I would love to know what people at the TSP, how they invest their money. Mm-hmm. I think that would
be. Well, when they come on, we'll ask. I know we won't get an answer.
Right, that's why I don't ask.
All right, let me do mine quick, and then we'll get to the emails and maybe even the phones. Taxes. I'm a tax type and a finance type, but the tax rates, the bad was done prior to 2013. So if we look at last year, tax rates are going to go up substantially, but only for a very small percentage of the taxpaying public. So most feds, probably most of us in the room, aren't going to get hurt too badly with that, with the income tax. Now, this mass transit subsidy that people got, they got $245 a month to ride buses and, I guess, light rails and in our case, the subway and other places, from $245 a month to $130, which is counterintuitive, isn't it? And they kept the parking reimbursement just a little bit higher than before, so it sounds like they're encouraging people to drive.
Well, you know, these things, I don't know why we decide that they have to make sense, but they don't always. Virginia, I believe now, is going to increase the gasoline tax because so many people are driving fuel efficient or electric cars that the revenue from the gas tax is going down.
Yeah.
So they're going to charge you more for doing the right thing, doing what they wanted you to do.
I heard another funny thing on electric cars. The engineers are looking at having the car make noise. You know, as a kid from wherever I grew up, you know, if you wanted a car that was loud, well, the electric cars aren't loud.
No, they're silent.
And I think it was Mercedes that was doing it. They say one of the drawbacks that people, you know, said was, I can't hear the engine.
Well, they're, I think it's
they're
a
dangerous
issue.
Too. There's
yeah,
a safety.
You walk
yeah,
out in front
I mean,
of
you
one.
Can. I was in somebody's Prius one and only time, and she backed up, and she had a. Like a little TV screen, mm-hmm. but the person back there never heard us coming. You know,
nope.
All right, there's. I've had people write and said, "Listen, if I sell my residence and I make a profit high enough, lucky enough to make that, I'll have to pay 3.8% Medicare tax on it." So there's this. I won't call it. It's Affordable Health Care Act. It's a surtax on investment income. Believe it or not, on interest, but your income has to be pretty high. So if your income, in order to hit this, is if you're single and your total income, which is affectionately called adjusted gross income, is $200,000 or more, you can get tagged with this. And if you're married and it's over $250,000, you can get hit with it. So,
you mean in addition to the ordinary Medicare tax, this is another Medicare tax?
This is just on investment income.
So, which was never subject to Medicare tax before.
Got it.
Huh. That's investment income on... the sale of property as well as investments like
sale
in the stock
of property,
market.
But if you sell your residence now, depending on your marital status, you won't pay tax on the first 250 or 500. So you really have to make some money for this to kick in, but you would pay capital gains tax. And if your income was above that level, you'd pay this Medicare tax. Hmm. But the thing that really hurts, I mean, anybody with just interest income, unless they're playing junk bonds or something, they're not making much to begin with, and they happen to be in that. They're gonna get clipped with
it. Is that for 2013 or 2014?
Yeah. 2013. So all the really bad stuff
has
been there for a year, just kind of belching, and now it's going to pop out on the returns. But and I don't think they're going to change it.
Well, I got a question for you as a tax guy and whatnot. I think the most interesting law ever conceived by man is the law of unintended consequences. You know, you outlaw booze, impose prohibition. What could possibly go wrong? You know, that kind of thing happens. So you do something like this, 3.8% first time added tax for some people who presumably are very smart. They've been very successful. They've made a lot of money. How are they going to get around that?
I mean, buy municipal bonds might soften it. Put more in rock solid stocks, whatever they are, and get away from the interest.
How'd they come up with 3.8% since the Medicare tax isn't that high?
You got me.
It's the chairman's wife's favorite number, 3.8.
Tammy, it wasn't high enough, so they had to, they had to raise it to 3.8.
Well, Medicare is one of the biggest spending vehicles in the budget, so I know they need to bring in some more revenue, but... that's sneaky.
Yeah. And then one other thing, and then I'll get off the bad news. You see, my stuff's always bad news. The Dodd-Frank, you ever heard of that Dodd-Frank bill? It's called the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. But it's going to have an impact on mortgages in 2014. It goes into effect, I think, the 6th of today?
Today.
January. Maybe it was the 1st. But anyway, that it would limit debt payments that couldn't exceed 43% of income. So in other words, if you go, and it goes back to those old days, and I think we're all old enough when it couldn't exceed 25%, and then it got loose. But let me finish before everybody gets up in arms. And then there would be a limit on the fees that could be charged on a mortgage to be no more than 3%. Now, that's not the recordation taxes and the transfer taxes, but this would be fees for settlement or the like, or maybe there's points up front and something like that. But as bad as it sounds, it's not necessarily for every mortgage. This would be kind of like government mortgages, but the shadow mortgage companies aren't going to be subject to this. Yeah, and it would impact about 13% of people that made mortgage applications in 2013.
So who should one talk to if they think they want to know more about that?
Well, I think when they go to look, they'll go, am I subject to this? And if I'm not, then any mortgage broker
should
probably
know.
Represents different people.
Yeah.
I won't say a good one, but you don't want one necessarily that's just selling you the product that they have. You'd like to know, well, maybe I go somewhere else. And it's just a caution flag because it seems like home ownership is going up. I mean, it could be a condo. It doesn't have to
price
be.
Price of homes are going up, too. Right, real estate's making a comeback somewhat.
All righty. So I'm the bad news bearer there. So, Tammy, you had two emails.
I did?
The
one was kind of interesting.
Let's do the easy one first. It was about, should I retire with over 28 years of service? The government changes from high three to high five in 2015. Should I go out before?
Don't you love that?
and your answer was, you know, very good.
I'll just read my answer and then Mike will have a comment, I'm sure. I answered that by saying the government or Congress has been threatening to change the high three to the high five for at least the last 30 years. I'm fairly confident that there are enough members of Congress who would not support this proposal for current employees. Believe it or not, we have friends in Congress. That you should not have to worry about this change prompting your retirement. Congress created a new retirement system for employees who were hired in 2013 and later, and it's called FERS-RE. In my opinion, these are the employees who may be affected by future changes in the retirement roles. Anything is possible, but I would not recommend making a major life decision for retirement based on a proposal that may not happen. In addition, would a high three with 28 years of service be any worse than a high five with 30 years of service? Considering that the 1% pay increase and the additional service and contributions to your TSP and full salary for an additional year or two, the prospects of your retirement would still improve even under a high five scenario if you delay your retirement plans to 2015 or later. So, my recommendation is to retire when you are mentally and financially ready to do so, regardless of any congressional proposals. In other words, be sure that you can afford to retire and that you have plans for your life after retirement.
When I was a kid growing up in D.C., and I mean the inner city D.C., Chinatown and whatnot, my mother and I ate out all the time because we lived in boarding houses.
Which is not Chinatown of today.
No, it's not at all. Very rough area then. But there was a donut shop down the town across from all the theaters were there.
Mayflower.
Real tall. And I remember there was a painting on the wall.
Oh, it was huge. Great
but it said, as you ramble on through life, brother, let this be your goal. Keep your eye on the donut and not upon the hole.
Yeah.
And I was 5
that.
Years old, but I thought,
you remember that.
I'll mark this.
Mike, you and I were about the same age. I remember the same thing. Yeah.
But my point with this lady is with all of the stuff that could be happening, including the change CPI, which we explained is very complicated, the least of her worries is that they're going to change from a high three to a high five in 2015 or probably any year ever. And Tammy sent me a letter a couple of years ago, and it's from the Department of the Air Force. It's to its employees. And it says, Congress is about to make the following changes. And it listed the changes, and the high three to high five was one of them. And it said, as soon as these changes are effective and we've run it past OPM, we will get back to you. It was dated, what, 1980? Okay. same old. Same threats. And I think there are people who have spent a full career, 30 or 40 years in government, waiting for the high three to be changed to a high five.
It hadn't happened yet.
I was lucky enough to be at a luncheon, and Mike was the featured speaker, and he pulled a letter out, and it really was the letter.
That was the letter.
Yeah, we've been going back and forth with that for about 15 years.
And he read it, and then he goes, Tammy Flanagan, something 1984 or something. Yeah. That was good.
Right, but it's the movie Casablanca, Round Up the Usual Suspects. Mm-hmm. Every year we round up the usual horror stories.
Well, they all sound good.
Yeah, they sound good. and it's possible. It's possible. It's something you shouldn't discount, but it's as you said, it's highly unlikely.
And it's usually proposed by the congressman who has no federal constituents in his district.
Yeah.
So you have to remember that so many states like California, Florida, Pennsylvania, D.C. area have millions of federal constituents, both retired and active. So those are the congressmen who don't support that legislation.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Well, you know, and that's a good point, too. Mm-hmm. When I think of federal cities, you know, people think of Washington, and people who haven't been here think that all government workers work in the same Quonset hut and go to the same lunch place. But Ogden, Utah is a bigger federal center population-wise than D.C. is. There are more people there. They work for Hill Air Force Base. They work for the Forest Service. They work for the Internal Revenue Service. And that's the major employer in Ogden, Utah. Anniston, Alabama. Huntsville, Alabama. There are a number of towns around the country.
All the big cities in California.
Yeah. And some of these very little towns, too, when they get a federal prison, they rejoice. They go to church.
That's
and everything.
Right.
But it's a major employer, so a lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. I think for many, many years, it may still be true, the AFGE was the largest union in Oklahoma.
Wow.
Who knew?
All right, there was another email here. I think we've answered it, but I'll put it out just in case we didn't fully answer it. And the question is, what significant changes, if any, do you see for retired federal employees for 2014? I think we...
The one thing that I think is maybe going to happen next year, because Congress has told OPM to study it, and this would be an improvement, would be changing the health benefit program from just having two options to having three. You know, right now you can choose self only or self plus one or self and family, and Congress said, why not have a self plus one option? And I think that's doable. I think now that we have all federal employees covered under Medicare, so retirees from federal service get Medicare benefits, I think a self plus one might be a cheaper option than self and family. So that would be interesting. That would be an improvement.
It's interesting you raise that point. I hadn't thought about it until this, but something that I think most people don't realize, they probably never knew Congress was in it. Now they don't know Congress is out of it. But forever, Congress has been part of the Federal Employee Health Benefits Program. Members of Congress and their staffs, they get the same benefits. They pay the same premiums. Now they've gone out of it. They are now the congressmen and representatives and senators are now in the DC Health Exchange looking mm-hmm. for health insurance.
Yep.
The lucky staff are still in it, but many are out. Once they've been separated, I don't think that bodes well for the federal employer health
that's
benefits
always,
program.
That's been a big concern because we've always felt secure in knowing that Congress had the same health insurance as federal employees, and now they don't.
Yeah, now they're out
so
of it.
So how will they vote in future concerns for mm-hmm. FEHB. Yeah, it'll be interesting.
Okay, the last email comes many times during the week from one of our astute listeners, and the email was, there's going to be this brain drain with the federal employees over the next 5-10 years. What are they going to do about it? And Tammy, I believe, responded, it's two pages, but it was a very good response to his question. They are going to go. Probably some things will be in high demand and short supply. Air traffic controllers, I would think pilots.
Yeah, about half of them can retire in the coming years.
And
so that could be a big disruption in air travel.
I don't know what the lead time is between when somebody comes on and when they're ready to go on their own.
But I'm sure that the FAA has known this was going to happen, so I'm sure they're recruiting air traffic controllers and they're in training as we speak. I mean, this has nothing to do with, you know, what we do in talking about retirement benefits, but I'm hoping that the heads of these agencies that see that their staff is all, you know, at least half of them or a third of them are eligible to retire, taking steps to replace them in the necessary capacity. So I'm hoping I'm confident that that's what's happening.
I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. And the other thing, too, is the tsunami has become a cottage industry here, predicting the tsunami. And it's been going on since 1999.
Yeah.
That's when the first tsunami was sighted, and it hasn't hit yet. Now, it's going to. You know, the numbers are there. I mean, people, unless they die at their desks, they will at some point retire. But again, we've had this retirement, the brain drain, and people have, companies have been founded on it, how to help government and advise them and how to train them. I think the critical things, as Tammy pointed out, one is this credit for sick leave, full credit for unused sick leave toward retirement. And if OPM gets its act together and comes up with this, phased retirement, mm-hmm. where you spend part of your time mentoring people, maybe work 3 days a week for 6 months. If those two things hit, and again, the OPM's got to get its act together in processing retirement claims because the backlog is
still a problem.
And they've
made big improvements to that. So that's, I think that's all headed in the right direction.
Yeah.
I think from talking to employees who are at retirement, who are eligible to retire, it's amazing how many people I meet who say that they've been counting down the days for 35 years, but now that it's here, They like their jobs and they're not ready to go. So it's not even that they can't afford to retire. It's just that they enjoy what they do and they can't think of anything more meaningful that they could do in retirement. So I think this phased retirement, when it's finally implemented, is going to be a very popular option.
There's a number of studies, too, that have shown the correlation between having a college education and your lifetime income. Mm-hmm. And now there's one out, and I don't know where I saw it or heard it, but it says that this goes into retirement as well, that people who with higher educations make more money in retirement or the retirement years for a couple reasons. One is the kinds of jobs they have, but two, they don't retire.
Mm-hmm.
They're not laborers. They're not out there, you know, busting their gut working. They're thinking. So the work is easier. It's more pleasing. And they stay on longer. So they continue to draw a salary longer. And so if that's true, if more of those people stay, then there may not be a brain drain after all. There may be a people drain, mm-hmm. but it won't necessarily be the experts, you know, the people at the National Cancer Institute and at NASA and whatnot. It won't be the top people because they love their jobs.
I was reading an article this week, and there's been much talk in the last few years about boomerang families and the kids.
Yeah.
This was just the opposite. The parents were moving in with the kids because they couldn't afford retirement.
Yeah.
We'll have our revenge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to see a lot of that, not so much with federal retirees, but with people in the private sector who don't have pensions, who mm-hmm. didn't save enough. That's something I'm worried about for the future.
Well, I saw a thing, too, that they were talking, and this is how statistics can trick you, and they were talking about how many more women there are in nursing homes than men. And you think, well, whatever reason, and somebody who knows these things, they said, no, the men won't go into a nursing home. Their kids take care of them.
That's right.
And the mother.
Or their spouse, their wives take care
of
them.
Right, exactly, yeah. So it's not quite what it appears to be.
That's right.
All righty, we have, 2 minutes, Andrew? Boy, that went fast, didn't it?
It always does when Mike's on. He makes it an interesting hour.
Three is a good crowd in situations.
It reminds
like
him
this.
Of the good old days back when we used to do this in the 90s, I guess. We started doing
this. One huge difference, though. We never talked about what we wanted to.
No, we didn't take phone calls. Yeah,
the phone, because there was no internet.
And it was Saturday, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big help.
All righty, so final thoughts?
Well, going to be an interesting year, and an election year. We don't know what impact that will have on the politicians may be so preoccupied, as they were with this pay raise, that they give feds a pass. You never know.
Time to start fresh. It's a new year. Put aside the past and look forward to the future.
And you know me, I'm going to have to talk about finances and budgets and whatnot, but it's just fine. More and more people, even who make money, these are more so private industry types, the gas tank is empty. And that car's got to pull that weight of the spending habits. So get a handle on your spending habits. Beginning career, go out and have some fun, but not for too long.
Go buy a house.
go buy a house. Make sure you put enough money down. And then you need to get more serious about it, because they got some great calculators in NARF's magazine. Tammy highlighted the great calculators for one's benefits, and I'm getting the high sign from Andrew that my benefit is over. Anyway, thanks for listening. We'll be back next week, and I believe it's going to be a tax show with Ed Zirndorf. Thank you, and have a great year. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.